Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Talkin' Steelers Football. I'm Bob Labriola, joined as always by Mike Pursuta of the DVE Morning Show. On our previous podcast, when we closed after previewing the San Diego game, I said, talk to you on Monday, and we'll see how right we were.
Well, I was exactly right.
You predicted
I was talking before the game about how one team's offensive line would not be able to deal with the other team's defense. I was talking about how, given the time of the game, one team would not be prepared to play.
One kickoff.
And I was talking about how eventually it would degenerate into a blowout. And I was right on all three of those, of course.
Yes, you were. Yes, you were.
Now, I may have thought it was going to be the Steelers that were on the good end of the blowout.
That's just a detail.
Detail, yeah. Exactly a detail. It's all in the process.
You know, you and I have talked often about and this is something that I believe that maybe the last piece of the puzzle for a team in its evolution into a good team is winning the games you're supposed to win, beating the teams you're supposed to beat. And the example that I always use to point this out is the Cincinnati Bengals. They are often the team that will not be able to beat the teams that they should beat, win the games they should win. That, to me, perfectly describes the 2012 Pittsburgh Steelers. I mean, now there are no more barriers. I mean, we had been able to hang our hats on, well, they're only losing to bad teams on the road. Can't do that anymore. We were also, well, at least I was. I'll just speak for myself. I was under the impression that now you're in a short-term focus situation. You're in December. You can clearly see what needs to be done. You've been there, done that group. And so, again, you're lining up against an inferior opponent. You should take care of business. That's gone. Can't do that anymore either, apparently. So, I mean, I really don't know what to expect from this team moving forward because, quite frankly, everything I've expected from this team to this point really has not come true. So just a little bit on the game. The final was 34-24, but to me it was 34-10. That's the way this game will be remembered. And
or 27-3 works too.
Okay. But just some of the things. I mean, how bad is bad? Bad is not being able to take advantage of a San Diego offensive line that was signing guys off the street. Just days before they got here. Bad is giving up a 17-play, 78-yard drive that took 9 minutes and 32 seconds to open the second half. They converted 5 of 5 on third downs, I believe. Bad is, you know, wow.
You want some more?
Yeah.
Bad is turning a 3rd and 10
into
a 1st and 10 because you jump off sides not once, but twice on successive non-plays.
And how about who did that?
Two of your guys that are supposed to lead the train, Troy Polamalu and James Harrison.
Defensive players of the year.
Bad is getting suckered on a fake punt.
Oh, yes.
Bad is not being able to pick up a football in your own end zone that got there under bizarre circumstances, shall we say. But Antonio Brown, if he had picked it up, I don't know what he was going to do with it because he was running toward the back of the end zone. I think he got a fall on that one or bat it out of bounds. You know,
right.
Take the safety and try to live to fight on. That was just unfathomable, really. I don't know what you could say about that. Bad is not being able to cover a receiver that a couple weeks ago was under the employ of the Jacksonville Jaguars, who are in most people's argument for the worst team in the National Football League, and the Jacksonville Jaguars decided we are better off without you, Michael Spurlock. Please move on down the road to your, I don't know, what is it, 5th or 6th NFL team. Yeah, it was bad.
Bad is allowing a team that in its previous, I believe, 3 or 4 games was 10 for 43, converting third downs. The Chargers ended up 12 of 22, but they were 12 of 20 to the point where it was 34-10.
How about that it was 34-10 against a team that had not beaten another team in the NFL other than the Kansas City Chiefs since September the 16th?
Yeah, mid-September, right.
And I believe that team was Tennessee.
Yes.
Which isn't exactly the 67 Green Bay Packers. That's bad. The rest is just details, Bob.
Yeah. And, you know, it's hard for me to evaluate effort. But it's – well, the one thing that I will say is that a lot of players were saying afterwards that they weren't ready to play when the game started. And, I mean, I don't – you know, I guess a good bit of that falls on the coach. But, I mean, to me, you're a professional. You know, you got to show up ready. Again, it's a short-term focus kind of situation. This baffles me. Well, more than baffling, it's disappointing and frustrating because I still believe that when you look at this roster, the Steelers roster, and compare it to some of the other ones, it stacks up very favorably. You know, you see what's happening in Baltimore today. Just a little while ago, the Ravens are fixing to come unglued, to quote the great Bubby Brister. They just fired their offensive coordinator, Cam Cameron. I don't know, you know, what they're going to do or how they think, you know, that helps them.
Apparently they didn't like the way the offense was being coordinated.
Well, I understand, but, you know, to me, I have no problem with John Harbaugh either taking the play calling duties away from him or whatever, however he wants to handle it. But I think that firing him, throwing him out of the building, smacks of a desperation and a panic that I don't know that's the kind of message you want to send. Now,
it's either that or an inspired, gutsy decision to try to right the ship. I don't know what the dynamics of Cam Cameron versus the rest of the people in that facility were. I don't know what kind of guy he is. I do know they haven't been getting the ball to Ray Rice enough. So if their idea is to consolidate and start getting him the rock and seeing where that takes him, maybe it'll work out for him. But I think to your point, that before I cut you off, there's some opportunity still.
Yes.
And I can't sit here with any degree of confidence or certainty that the Steelers will be able to seize it.
Right. Absolutely not. And I agree with that 100%. You know, after the most recent version of this losing to a bad team, Mike Tomlin responded by demoting Rashard Mendenhall, by putting Kelvin Beachum in the starting lineup, by moving Marquise Pouncey to guard. I mean, is there any of those things? I don't know what – bring Mendenhall back.
Do I get to play coach here
for a
moment?
Yeah, please do, because –
I'll tell you what I would do.
Yes, yes, I'm very interested in this.
I would go back to Rashard Mendenhall. I am not a fan of his Twitter, and I have found him confounding to deal with in the reporter-athlete relationship. That's not necessarily it's difficult. It's hard to figure out.
Yes.
That aside, I think he is the best running back on the team. And you got three games here to make some hay still. I want to go with the guy I think is the best running back. I talked to Marquise Pouncey after the game yesterday, and he was very upset talking about Willie Colon. He didn't talk about Colon long, but he said words to the effect of, man, I can't believe this happened to him again. And that made it sound to me like it's going to be a long-term thing with Colon. So if he's out of the offensive line equation, I'm going to try to get David DeCastro in there somewhere. I think that's going to be at right guard. I think I'm going to play Pouncey at center where he's an all-pro. I think I'm going to stick with Kelvin Beachum at right tackle and see, does that work, and figure out left guard. Maybe it's Ramon Foster. Is there another option?
Ligurski.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That's
but
not.
But I would not accept this. I understand a lot of guys, Mike Tomlin included, Ryan Clark included, were talking about, hey, we're going to stick with the process. Tomlin said, you know, it's too late to change the way they practice. You're not going to look at film any differently than you look at it. Clark said they prepared for San Diego the same way that they had prepared.
For
the Raven game, they prepared the same way. I'm not saying that's at fault, but I got to try something because it's just piling up here, the inconsistencies, and you got to try to eliminate that. If you do, there's some very good performances on tape, and there are also at Oakland, at Tennessee, and yesterday.
Yeah.
I don't even include Cleveland in there because Number one, I think Cleveland's actually the best of those four teams. I think Cleveland's coming a little bit, and I think the defense played really well in Cleveland. And it was just a rare collection of circumstances for the offense, from none of the running backs being able to hold on to the ball. The third-string quarterback was in for the first time. One of those is season, and sometimes that happens when you're under those circumstances. But the other three games, I still can't believe they lost all three of them.
Yeah, and the thing that annoys me the most is that, you know, this same lesson seemingly has had to be taught over and over and over again. I mean, you know, Chuck Knoll, his famous line was, speaking about himself, if you hit a donkey on the head with a 2x4 often enough, even he gets the message. Well, you know, I don't know if in Oakland and in Tennessee weren't the 2x4 games, you know, all due respect to what you're saying against Cleveland, I will agree with you in that assessment. But I also think that was a game, you know, you turn it over 8 times. That, to me, is a very self-inflicted kind of situation. And so, if nothing else, that should have been the 2x4 game.
And it seemingly was, based on the response in Baltimore.
Yes. Yes. And the lessons are not learned. Maybe the attention span is, in terms of remembering these lessons, you know, isn't what it needs to be. But it confounds me. You know, the Antonio Brown thing. And again, I said this earlier, and I'm going to say it again. It's difficult for me to judge effort, and so I'm not going to say he wasn't trying. But it didn't look to me, when you saw the replay, that, I mean, there was a balls out kind of going for that football thing.
Yeah, I haven't seen any replays to any degree that I can glean anything from them yet. That'll be tonight.
Yeah.
Really looking forward to that, by the way. But I just think it
– I think I'd rather go to the mall and Christmas shop than watch that over.
It's almost a football IQ thing to me. And I don't want to say he doesn't have that, but just taking that one play –
in that moment, yes.
The ball is in the corner of the end zone. You're way ahead of everybody else. You're not going to be able to do anything with it if you do pick it up. So just get it out of bounds. Fall on it. Kick it. You can get a penalty for that, but even that's better than the touchdown.
Yeah.
Right?
That's 2 points.
They wouldn't call it a touchdown if there's a penalty, right?
No, that's accurate. Yeah, right. You cannot give up the touchdown there. I mean, it's 20-3 at that point. Yeah,
even 22 and you got to give them the ball back, you're still hanging by a thread.
Yeah.
You're hanging.
Yeah.
How does that happen? I don't know. I haven't seen them do a drill on that ever, because I'm assuming that the coaches are assuming that – everybody's going to know the right thing to do if that ever comes up.
Yeah, again, you mentioned football IQ. That should be something that's pretty much ingrained. If you have reached this level, that should be in your DNA. I mean, the ball's bouncing around in the end zone. Dive on it.
I think if you haven't reached this level, that should be in your football DNA.
Well okay. And especially in this league where – officials now seem to be really allowing things to go, and then they figure if it's a scoring play or a turnover, we'll let the booth figure it out, and we'll just let it play out. We're not going to blow the whistle or stop anything. We'll just let it play out and then figure it out under the hood. So, you know, again, these are the kinds of things that, you know, just inexplicable to me. And I don't know who your leaders are in this Steelers team. I don't.
Yeah, maybe we're about to find out. It's a great question. I don't have an answer for you. I know Brett Kiesel was talking about addressing prior to the game that a couple times previously a bad result has happened in these circumstances. Don't let it happen again. As he put it, apparently it wasn't enough. I don't know if it wasn't soon enough or forceful enough or what have you. Casey Hampton was asked about the emotional investment and were they up for the game. And he said that should never be an issue. And I asked him, well, was it an issue? And he said, I can only speak for myself. So he didn't say it wasn't an issue. Other guys, as you alluded to, addressed that it in fact was. That's hard to get your head around when there's so much potential and possibility. And you're coming off such a seemingly season-turning game as that Ravens game was.
You know, and while I agree with Casey Hampton's assessment, and I respect him for that, you know, he got himself ready. But what my question is, I don't think that, you know, that it, you have a locker room full of that. I don't think any team has a locker room full of those kind of people. And so, to me, there have to be some people in there that kind of help out those who are lagging or those who don't know what to do or those who need a kick in the butt or whatever it might be. And that's when I say, who are the leaders in there? I don't know. And I'm not saying there aren't any, but it used to be fairly, you know, Aaron Smith, James Ferrier, Jerome Bettis, you know, even Hines Ward for all of his idiosyncrasies.
No question.
You know, no question. So, but
not only in the locker room stuff, but setting a tone with physical play and effort.
Go out and rock somebody.
That was pretty consistent for about,
I don't know, every year he played. Yeah. Yeah. And again,
10 plus, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So, this is one of the most confounding situations that I can remember of late with this team. And I really, listeners, wish I had some sort of pearl of insight, you know, to drop on you to make all of this, you know, make sense. But I'm just like everybody else. I am totally confused.
The only thing I got out of the locker room yesterday that approaches something of that nature was from Larry Foote, and that is in the story I did for you in Steelers Digest. When I had asked him, when do you get to the point where you just think, all right, we don't have it? And Foote said, you can't. If you're going to win the Lombardi, the teams that win the Lombardi push those doubts away. Doubt threatens to creep in during the course of every season. The team that wins the Lombardi doesn't allow it to. And the teams that don't win the Lombardi are the ones that are unable to deal with it. So I think what he was trying to say is they're going to, you know, dust themselves off and swallow hard and take the criticism and get back in the lab, as they like to say, and go into the next game thinking they're going to win in Dallas and then go from there. And if they do anything but that, they have no chance.
Yes, that is an accurate statement. And that would be a definitive ending to a season and a very disappointing one as well. That's going to do it for this edition of Talking Steelers Football. For Mike Persuda, I'm Bob Labriola. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you later this week. And hopefully then we'll either have some answers or at least we can make fun of the Cowboys a little bit.
I think Wednesday's going to be an interesting day around here.
Tomorrow might be not too shabby either. I want to see how the head coach kind of – but how he presents himself, because a lot of times the message he delivers in that media room on Tuesday is what those players hear on Wednesday. Thanks for listening. Talk to you soon.